Welcome to Geeks of North, the hobby and gaming podcast on the Belle Provence. This week I'm here with Antoine. We have a couple topics for you. First up, we're going to talk about a new event we're running this fall. And secondly, we're going to talk to you about how you find opponents. So why don't you sit back, relax, grab a paintbrush, and enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Geeks of North. As always, I'm your host, Paul Filion. Here this week with the first and greatest of my co-hosts, Antoine Bergeron. Hey, buddy. How's it going?
Pretty good, you?
Pretty good. It's been a long time since we've done one of these two-man shows.
Yes, I don't remember when.
Yeah, it's been a long time. But that's cool, because it should make the show quick and nimble.
That remains to be seen.
Well, you know, we could try. So, this week we're going to talk about a couple different topics, shorter, smaller, should be good distractions while people paint. But of course, before we get to those main topics, we have all our usual stuff. So we have the cool stuff on the web, and we have our hobby time and our games played. And then, I don't see a hobby tip of the episode in our notes, so we're going to skip that and we're going to go right to our first topic. And so we shall get this show on the road. And first up, we'll do some cool stuff on the web. Antoine, what'd you find this week?
Okay. I stumbled upon that. I don't remember if it was on Facebook or on Twitter first, but the artist that did all the War Master giant layout, or the page layout, the page bottom arts, got back his art from Game Workshop. So he got all the originals. He picked them up. And he has been posting the pictures on Facebook. And I mentioned War Master because that's the one I saw first. But he got back arts for a bunch of different games, all by Game Workshop. So if you go through his page, we'll be linking to the Game Workshop, the War Master one. But there are arts for a ton of other games. And you get just the art piece, just the drawing or the painting. And I really love the War Master art because it really gives a feel of the epicness of the giant battles that were happening in the old world.
Yeah, and he's got a very, very cool style. Like, it's the art is, a lot of it's not clearly defined.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how to say that? It's not that it's almost like a sketch in some ways.
Yeah, kind of.
It's very cool. I think it really gives a lot of flavor. And it suits, because in some of the arts, like when they capture, let's say, orcs and stuff, there's a certain silliness to the art, which kind of conveys that kind of look the orcs have in Warhammer Fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really well done. And I'd never seen this before, because I've never seen War Master.
Yeah, I remember when I picked up the book first time when it was released, what, early 2000s, something like that. The art especially jumped at me. When you're in the post, some of the latest one, you have multiple per page. Those were the bottom pagers. You had all text, and at the bottom of the page, you had a small action scene, either a faction rank or two faction fighting one against each other. One was a dragon, breathing flames and destroying the whole front rank of an army. And they were all just small pictures at just the bottom of the page. And they looked so cool. They added theme to the book. So seeing those again, and seeing the originals with the original colors, I really liked those. I wish they were available as prints.
Well, if they gave the art back to him, I guess that means he has the rights to it now?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I've seen people ask, but I never saw him answer. So,
well, it's probably maybe it's not time the case. To PM him.
Maybe. I'll see.
Because that would be cool.
Yeah. I really would love.
I keep looking at this War Master stuff. I really love small scale, right? And that's why it always killed me that Dystopian Wars never really went anywhere. I got into it really late. And it was kind of like my chance to play a War Master style game, and then it died locally.
we both still have our stuff.
And yeah, we talk about always doing something, and yet we never have.
Yeah, because we always start on the other games. We just need to concentrate.
Oh, yeah, that's going to happen. But I really like the idea of War Master.
Yeah.
Well, you know, my birthday's coming up. Maybe it'll be time to gift myself some little men, some littler little men.
Some tiny men.
That's right.
I don't remember if I said the artist name. So it's John Wiggly. I hope I didn't butcher his name too much.
It looks like Wiggly. Yeah, Wiggly. W-I-G-L-E-Y. Yeah, and one of the comments on the art on the album is someone said best game ever and posted a picture of what I believe is probably Carl Franz on a griffin.
Yeah, either Carl Franz or an Empire General. I don't know if it's the character or not. But.
Yeah, it's hard to say. But just that looks cool. And since I know the size of it, I know how small it is.
Yes.
The man who painted that did an excellent job, for one. But it looks so cool.
And that's one thing I love. Because back in that days when we played War Master, not War Master, but we played Warhammer, the monsters, and same thing for 40K, the scale was not true. Like, the monster were not to scale with the troops. Sure, they were bigger. And same thing for the tanks, but they were not in scale with the models that they were going along. Like, the giants was big, but it was ogre-sized, really.
Yeah.
Like, Forge World released a giant that was double the size or something like that. Nowadays, with the plastic and the bigger and larger kits, it's less the case. But back then, if you wanted monsters with a real epic scale compared to the troops, you had to look at War Master, the giants, the Dark Elf Hydra, the dragons. There, they were big.
Yeah, I totally understand what you're saying.
Some nostalgia, some artistic nostalgia for today's cool stuff.
And again, you tease me with the War Master, you evil man, you. All right, let's talk some hobby, buddy. And you know, it's a good thing that we don't record very often anymore, because it gives me a chance to actually make it look like I've done stuff. Because lately, I haven't been very prolific in my hobby, which is saying something, because I'm the one of us that usually produces. Like, either nothing or in giant quantity. Yeah. So,
right now, I'm in one of those. You and me both. On the knitting side?
Yeah. anyway. But, yeah, so I was fairly prolific. I assembled... we'll start off with some Guild Ball. So, I assembled Veteran Rage, Harry the Hat, Strongbox, Mist, and Snakeskin. For those who don't know, those are Union team players. And... what set that off is I picked up Seasoned Brisket at Adepticon, and I was really enamored with that model. So because of that, I'm like, well, I've got a bunch of Union models I bought for play with my other teams, so if I put them all together with her, I can make, you know, make a Union team. So I got her mostly painted up. In the notes I say she's painted, but she's not quite done. I never finished her weapons. But the model itself is done, and she came out pretty nice for the time I painted her. I mean, I did it in one evening, so it's a fairly quick job. And then while I was away on business last week, I actually took my painting stuff with me, and I painted Mist. Or started painting her. Him. It. I think it's a him.
Him.
Yeah. you know, I have to say, those models... it's one of the original sculpts, and it's got a limited edition one that looks so much better.
Yes.
But it's still a decent model, except for the way it's designed to mount to the base.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's kind of like pain. Gliding, right? And he's got the tiniest ankles ever. Like, he makes original Infinity models look robust. And by painting him, I've actually bent him off. Like, he's going to pop off. He's going to break off the base. I know it. It's only a matter of time. So now the trick is, how do I pin him? Yeah. Because his leg is so thin.
Yeah. And he only has one foot on the base, right?
On the ground. Yes, exactly. It's retarded. I'm basically going to shove a pin into his butt and pretend I don't see it, and that'll be the end of it. He'll just be pinned right through his ass to the base. Good to go.
I assembled him, but I no longer have it. Steve as my original version. I have the limited edition one now.
Yeah, Steve broke it off at the ankle.
Oh, yeah, and then
pinned it to the base, and then hid the foot in a bush.
That's a solution.
So he's standing in a bush, which is also a possibility for me. It could happen. Maybe I'll just make a big like crater around him, and I'll fill it with resin and make him standing in a puddle. I'll do a little variant. But yeah, so I've started painting him, and I've got he's probably 85% done. But one thing I found is I'm painting him in the original Union color scheme, the kind of gray and dark red. And while it looks okay in the art, it's pretty boring on the models because it's very dark. So I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to stick with that scheme. It worked okay on Brisket because she's got like a vest and there's like, so her arms are showing. She's got all kinds of pouches and leather showing. So there's still things to break up the color on her. Plus she has bright red hair and the light skin. So I still found there was enough variance in the color on her that when you look at her on the table, she doesn't kind of wash out.
Mm-hmm.
But we missed because he's got a giant cloak and, you know, dark gloves, dark boots. His face is in shadow. He kind of doesn't look like much from 3 feet away, you know?
Yeah, so I can see that.
I may have to fiddle a little bit. You know, I'll ask Guillaume how to throw some OSL on it or something. what else did I do? Oh, yeah. So we talked about 3D wargaming.
Yes, we did in the past. Yeah,
in the past. And it's a...
And for those who don't know it, talking about those again today.
Oh, it's true. So 3D Wargaming makes files that you can purchase for a very, very reasonable price for a bunch of different tanks and stuff. And you can print them up on a 3D printer. So I bought the files for T-34 to try out. And I have access to some 3D printers. So I've printed, I don't know, 3-4 of them or whatever. And these are 28 mil scale, so like bolt action sized.
And the T-34 is a Russian thing World War II.
Yeah. And I'm pretty happy with the print quality, the way it came out. There's some fine tuning. Sadly, my printer is a MakerBot, one of the newer ones. And when you're 3D printing, and this is the part that most people don't understand or realize. 3D printers that work with a filament, FDM, they're called. There's not a whole heck of a lot of difference in resolution between a $3,000 MakerBot and a $500, you know, Chinese knockoff whatever printer from Amazon. If they're both properly calibrated, they output very similar end results. One of the things that does make a difference between printers is the software you use that takes the 3D model and slices it into layers and creates the tool path for the machine to print in. The MakerBot printer I have access to uses a custom software solution that is proprietary. So you cannot use any other slicer software. And it works pretty well, and it printed the tanks, I would say, very well overall. But it has trouble with the main cannon on the T-34 for some reason. Just the main cannon. The turret is fine. True. The bodies are fine.
You mentioned that. And you have other smaller parts that it prints without a problem.
Perfectly. Yeah, little machine guns. Little tiny machine guns on the front of the tank. No problem. But that main gun is an issue. And I've done probably 40 of them to try to get like different print settings. And I've got all kinds of different iterations of the print file saved. So like, I know which ones work best. And the thing is, I don't even get consistent results between, like, if I print the same file twice, I sometimes get variation in how it prints, which is really strange. So out of like the 30 I've done, I've got 4 or 5 ones that I find acceptable that I can, with a little bit of green stuff, I can make them perfect. But aside from that, I'm really happy with the models. And, you know, if you've got access to a 3D printer, the materials are very cheap. You can buy a spool of filament on Amazon, like decent filament, in PLA, which is a biodegradable plastic, for about $25. If you're not picky on the color. So that's for a kilo. And depending on how you make the tanks, you'll probably get, I could see 10, 15 tanks out of a roll. So it makes it pretty affordable, which is nice. Yeah, so that was a lot of fun playing. Learning something new is always fun. And 3D printing, while it's been out for a long time, it's a lot of tweaking, a lot of fine tuning. So it's a learning experience. So that was a lot of fun to play with. Moving on to some more traditional stuff, I assembled a bunch of Menoth Jacks, Redeemers, Reckoners, for a list I decided I'll probably never play, because I looked at it and went, wow, that won't be fun for anyone to play against.
So you assembled them before starting to think about the list and not playing again?
I thought about the list, and I was like, okay, this could really work. And then I looked at it, like, so I assembled all the models, I bought all the models, assembled everything, got it ready to go. And then it dawned on me that, you know, I don't play the game to win top of turn two, raffle stomp someone, and make them not want to play anymore. That's not my goal. So, and not only that, the list would get very boring. The premise of the list was basically, it uses a caster whose feat is a knockdown. It's Krios 1. So he does a really big knockdown feat.
A pop and drop.
Yeah, the pop and drop. When everyone's going to be like, yeah, it was going to be the other, going to shake it off. But you can only shake it off if you survive long enough to do it. That's the problem. Because then I had something like 15 or 16 templates I could drop on your army.
Yeah.
And that's just not fun for anyone. So I figure I'll probably never play that list. Except maybe against Yom. Okay. I'm kidding. I wouldn't even do that to Yom. Even he doesn't deserve that. Sorry, we hadn't made fun of him in the last 10 minutes, so I had to get in there. Aside from that, I assembled some Signar. In honor of Yom, I decided to get my Signar out of the boxes I've had them in for the last 5 years and build them all. So I assembled a Stormwall. Which is their colossal, a couple chargers, a couple fireflies, a couple hunters, and I stripped a couple of defenders that I'd painted years ago. Oh, and I built, what is that other jack? Stormclad as well. And then I've been spending a lot of free time doing lists for War Machine. I'm going to count that as hobby. Because
with the amount of stuff you assembled, I can see why you've been doing dojo.
Yeah, lots and lots of list dojo. And it's led to some fun lists. And actually, I tried one of them last night, but I'll get into that in a second. That's it for my hobby. So I've done a fair amount of assembly, not a whole lot of painting. And I've done some buying. I did some more buying today, but I'll save that for next time. For games played. I don't have much going. I played a game of Guild Ball against you, but I'll let you talk about that. And I played a game of War Machine with Yom. And it went well, in the sense that it was a good game. It went well for Yom in the sense that he beat the pants off me. But it was a fun list, so I lost to his bottom of the barrel list, so he's playing in a bottom of the barrel tournament where you have to basically take your worst caster. Now, luckily, Signar, even their worst caster, is not that bad, and they have enough good supporting units that you can make a lot of stuff work.
Like you said, the caster might be bad. The rest of the army isn't.
Yeah, but it was a... Actually, I don't know if it was in tier. It probably was. I would guess it was in Storm Division. It was probably Storm Division now I think about it. So it was Connie B, as Yom calls her. So Constant Plays. She had Gallant on her. She had, I don't know who had what. There was Thorn in the list. There was a Firefly. He had, Runewood, Stormblades, what's the cavalry called?
Storm Lances.
Lattermore. Yeah, it must have been Storm Division. I think he had one or two Stormblade captains and a squire. Yeah, that was probably most definitely Storm Division. I was playing a non-tiered Kador list. I had a Conquest on Vlad 1. And then I had two Jack Marshall destroyers that were on the new... the new Kolden Lord solo Man of War guy, whose name I can't even recall. Can you remember what that thing is called?
Nope.
Wow, I suck. This makes good radio while I get War Room open, because it's going to drive me nuts if I don't come up with the name. Anyway, so I had two of those guys. I had Reinhold Goblin Speculator on Vlad, in case Yom had something that was, you know, stealthy, which of course he didn't, but I didn't know that in advance. I had Gorman DeWolf for smoke screens and acid and blind, all that fun stuff. I had a field gun for auto knockdown on hit, which is always joyous. And I had a battle wagon, a gun carriage, sorry.
The guy you were looking for is probably the Grey Lord Forge Seer.
Yes, that's exactly it. Thank you. And I think that's it. I killed a lot of his stuff. Yeah, that was the whole list. That was 75 points. So obviously no tier because I had mercenaries in there and everything else. And we're playing the pre-CID version of the battle wagon. So it's the kind of poopier version of the gun carriage. Mm-hmm. It's still pretty good, but not as good as the CID version.
Yeah.
We're playing the scenario with three flags evenly spaced along the middle of the table. We have 1 point for could be 1 point for controlling or dominating the flag.
Mm-hmm.
A couple things happened in this game. We're playing with flat terrain, which I don't normally do, and I kept forgetting it was there. So I'd be like, "Can I shoot that guy?" And Yom's like, "Well, he's got +2 defense. Like, why? Well, he's on a hill. Like, what? Oh, I'm just gonna run over here. Oh, wait, is this water? Yeah, this is water. Oh." Well, I guess I won't run through that. I'll go around it. So this is a bunch of like odd stuff like that. I killed his storm. What do we call them? Storm lances. So I killed all the storm lances. I killed Lattermore. I killed, I think, Thorn, and one of his other light jacks. I put a lot of damage on Constance. She had about 6 boxes left. But in the end, he won, control points. I'd forgotten, I've been listening and reading so much about, Steamroller 2017, that I forgot that there was a 5-point limit in 2016, which is what we were playing. So he got the 5 points, and he's like, "Okay, I win." I'm like, "What do you mean you win? Like, I'm not dead? There's no..." I look at the clock, I'm like, "Oh, I've only got 30 seconds on the clock." Yeah. He's like, "Well, no, I get 5 points this turn." And I was like, "Oh, yeah, I forgot about that 5-point thing." But it was a good game, a lot of fun. And it was an interesting list. It didn't have a lot of models for me, but I was surprised at how effective it was. Like, it had enough AoEs and pressure that it could apply that it was a fairly interesting list to play. And Jack Marshall's, especially that one, are a lot better than I thought. It was the first time I'd ever played with Jack Marshalls. So they have some pretty decent abilities. The fact that he can give a focus to a Jack, and the fact that he makes all the Jack's attacks magical and blessed against Signar, not so bad.
Mm-hmm. Especially blessed. The magical part doesn't really matter.
But blessed is important, right? Arcane Shield? What Arcane Shield? Yeah. So it was pretty good.
And the new rules for the Jack Marshall seems interesting.
Yeah. The thing is, you know, you still end up with Jacks that are kind of underpowered in some ways, or they're a little bit starved. Luckily, with Science Importance from Vlad and the one focus, like with the Jack Marshall's abilities, it didn't really feel like my Jacks were underpowered,
mm-hmm.
which was nice.
It's the goal. You put them there if you have the support to make them work.
Yeah. Well, I was just going for lots of shooty, lots of templates. And I had lots of templates. I mean, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 templates. 10, 11 I think the Forge Hero can throw sprays too. Actually, it's not spray, it's just a regular dark damage. But yeah, so there's enough templates going around that it's yeah. Whee! And then that was it for my games. How about you, Antoine?
On the hobby side first, I finished a couple of models that were on my table for a long time. I finished the boar for my butchers for Guild Ball, and I finished Virus for Pulp City. Both had been on my painting table, partially painted for 3 to 6 months, maybe.
Is Virus a monkey?
Yeah. Virus is one of my it's a spider monkey to go with me, my ARC.
Awesome.
Yeah, the small, it's a small support model that works with the one of the type they call, they are power. I don't remember the name, but they have bigger models. Most of them are on 50 millimeter bases, and those don't provide their own action points. They're powerhouse. And how it works is
the Supermans.
Hit really, really hard, but they don't provide resources in the game.
And that's right.
Usually you bring other models that can provide more resource than they use to power your powerhouse. In the case of the ARC, the one of the support piece is Virus, and it's pretty special because both Virus and A-Bot, which is the ARC powerhouse, they both have rules that target directly the other one, so Virus doesn't really make sense to bring in a game if you don't have A-Bot. And A-Bot is limited if you don't bring Virus, which is not the case for the other powerhouse in the other list. So it limits a bit the list versatility because you kind of have to bring both. But they are fun to play together. So I'm happy half of the combo is now painted.
I'm looking at the model for Virus. He's hilarious. He's basically a little spider monkey wearing like cargo pants and a Hawaiian shirt.
Yep.
So it's pretty awesome. And 8-Bot looks pretty good. You know, I didn't give Pulp City a fair shake in terms of models. I think the more recent stuff has gotten a lot better in terms of sculpts.
I'm happy to say that. Because if you finally look at them and find enough that you might like, you might want to play it.
Yeah. Oh, I when I tried it, I really liked the game. I did a demo a couple years ago.
Yeah, we talked about that. I don't know if we talked about that in the show before, but you like the rules. You just don't really like the models or enough to play the game.
You know, I'm looking at stuff and there was some cool models, but it wasn't quite enough. Mm-hmm. But looking at what they've got now, like Amok and stuff, or Amok.
And it's not like you need a lot. Most game you need from 4 to 8 models, maybe. And you're not limited to faction. As long as they're either all from the same faction or all from the same alignment. So all neutral or evil or neutral and good. So you have a lot of list building options. You're not limited. So you can go however you want.
Way of the Fist and Blade. That was actually one of the factions I'd looked at before. So, yeah. Man, there's a lot of neat ones now. I look at another one called Antian.
Mm-hmm.
He looks wicked awesome. He looks almost like a Viking or something. He's like a cross between He-Man and Odin. That's kind of what he looks like. Oh, screw you, Antoine. Oh, you're all like, look at this game. Look at this.
Really, if you start that game, I'll be so happy because it's one of my favorite game right now.
Well, the fact that you can fully interact with the world is really neat.
Yeah, you throw buildings, you throw people in them, you can
grab a dumpster, pick it up, throw it at someone. Like,
yeah, it's so fun. It's so dynamic.
Really, and it plays on such a small table. It
feels like an action movie or...
And can you imagine playing this with 80% G? Because he also has models for this game, you know.
Yes, I know.
And he's animated. You could take the most boring game ever and he has to act out everything his models do. Can you imagine what he's going to be like with this?
That would be fun. Playing a 3 or 4 player game. Yeah.
We'll have to talk more outside the show.
Ah, yes. You're starting to get War Master more, Pulp City more. Wow. We even talked about the Disappearing War again. It's my birthday show, it seems. Okay, after that, I did a lot of cleaning and assembly. Well, I say a lot, but after you, I did a bit. So I cleaned up and glued a veteran ox for my butchers. I cleaned up a mist speaker for Ords, for the minions, and also Red Bella for Pulp City. And I also cleaned and partly assembled Dexterius and Iwane for Ariana Rex. That's the rider with the horse for Legio 13. And that's it for assembly. Yeah. I did some painting on Minx for Francois, a local player, a friend, a buddy. We're doing some trade. I'm trading a paint job for a boat from the Kickstarter for Blood and Plunder, one of the Risen boat.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And I also started cleaning a Dark Eldar Archon for Albatar conversion. English speaker will be Captain Arlok.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Doing a Captain Arlok Dark Eldar Archon conversion for a guy in Montreal. And the last item in the hobby, I painted a couple of tanks for 3D Wargaming. So you mentioned them earlier. So I got a Tiger and a T-34 from them to paint for the when they do shows and for the websites. This was my first foray into historical painting. And I must be honest, after painting those, I'm starting to look at an historical game or almost historical, maybe Conflict 47 or Dust or whatever. Any reason to paint more historical? It's not exactly the same style as painting sci-fi or
It's something fantasy. Different, right?
Yeah.
And you can weather it up and it's...
And I enjoyed it quite a bit. I haven't painted that much vehicles in the past. And all that weathering was really fun. I never really I don't do much battle damage.
Yeah.
And this was my first time really jumping into it. And I really enjoyed it. About some of the new weathering effects from Valeo to do part of it. Mixed pigments, lots of oil, lots of... controlled wash, glaze, everything, and really liked it. So they were a blast to paint.
And they came out fantastic. I mean, you did an excellent job. Even I showed them off to a friend of mine, James Wapple, who's a pretty well-known painter in the States, and he does a lot of historical stuff, and he thought they were super well done. So
yeah. Was nice hearing that from him.
Yeah, well...
And they were... fast to paint. That's another thing. I took less time on that than I thought for results that I find really good. I could have gone a lot more in depth in the weathering, but I think it's a good level where I stuck.
It's about a balance too, right? Because you can keep going, but then you have to worry about doing too much, right? Too much of a good thing.
Yes.
Yeah. And then people stop looking at the model as a whole and all they see is a bunch of weathering.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that could really happen, too. So, no, I think you chose the right place to stop.
Yeah. So, looking forward to more of those. And with the 40K craze right now, with the 8th edition coming, we might try it out in the group. That might be a reason to paint more vehicles, too. So
Imperial Guard.
Well, even just the Doom crawlers for my skilleries would be a good place to start. There's less type of withering to apply on a Mars Mars unit, but I could build up another Forge World, then Mars, maybe, to have more withering possibilities. We'll see.
That's very true.
So that's it for my hobby. On the game side, I played a War Machine game against Mathieu Sirois, one of our listeners. He was at Kieslidik for the casual tournament, and he won, air quote, the wooden spoon. But he had to leave early. So
wooden spoon means last place, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's a last place. It's an award that dates from the UK. They gave that to Aviron team. They had a wooden Aviron that they gave to the last place, and it descends from there.
Yeah. I have one. I'm the proud owner of a wooden spoon.
Yeah. So he won one of the wooden spoon, but he had to leave early. So we had a wooden spoon in the stuff after we picked up the venue. And so I met with him, played a game. So my pigs again is Kador. Had some fun with the rule book scenario, something simple. And I gave him his wooden spoon back.
He played Sorsha. Which one?
Sorsha one, the basic caster.
She is one of the best in Kador, right? Mm-hmm. She's one of the scariest casters they have.
If I remember correctly, that's the only caster he has.
Oh, wow. So he's really a new player.
He's been playing for at least a couple of years, I think, but he doesn't play that much. And he hasn't invested in tons and tons of stuff. So he paints what he has and builds slowly on it. So he was looking at trying out new casters. Don't know which he went, but I was playing Arcadius. So lots of pigs against Kador. Was fun. I also played a game of Guildball with you.
Yes, you did.
Sous-sol. At the basement.
I still hurt. I still hurt.
Oh, it wasn't that bad. The thing that hurts probably the most is Sharshenko after missing that goal. That goal kick.
I missed a couple goal kicks in that game, and it was pretty depressing.
Yeah.
Let me tell you. For the ball handling team, I don't know where my team was, but they weren't on the field that night.
Yeah,
or they were hungover from the night before. I don't know. But.
Well, they tried. You did one goal, and if Shark had,
they didn't try enough.
You would have been away enough to not be killed the following turn, and it would have been a lot more close.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not. It wasn't a bad game at all. I did okay. It was one of those games where truly my dice abandoned me.
Yes.
I'm not saying I lost because of dice, but they didn't help.
No, they sure
leave
didn't.
It at that. I mean, I'm a big enough man to admit that your skill level is much higher than mine, but yeah, my dice, it was, I hurt.
Yeah. It was.
It scarred me.
It was bad.
That's why I started building my union. That's the real reason. Like
to switch, make some change from playing fisherman all the time.
Time for a change.
Yeah. And the last game I played is a game of War Master with against Benoit once again. We were playing one of the, I don't know if they were in the War Master or one of the War Master magazines, a scenario called The Cursed Fortress. So you have two spots on the table, two main spots. One is like an orb or an enchantment somewhere in a small zone in the middle. And once you activate that by leaving a unit there, it opens up a fortress that's hidden and that you can start attacking because there's a defensive force there and you can take the fortress. So activating the small orb give you some victory points. Taking the fortress gives some victory points, and killing each other also give victory points. We ended up the game never even approaching the fortress and only unlocking it like the turn before the end at 7 at the sixth or seventh turn. So it was just a big grind. I was playing my dwarf. Benoit was playing his Dogs of War. And I must say, I really, really like Warmaster.
Dogs of War is like a mercenary army, right?
Exactly. Yeah. He usually play empires, but he got a bunch of other troops from, he has the Battle of the Five Armies, 10mm game that Game Workshop did. So that comes with dwarves, that comes with a small goblin wolf riders, and a bunch of troops that can fill up an empire list to become a Dogs of War list almost. So he was using his Albargers as pikemen instead, because the Dogs of War list comes with pikemen instead of Albargers. But
that's close enough.
Yeah, close enough. They're not ranked the same way. The pikemen are ranked facing the small side of the base, but he was just playing them sideways, and it didn't really matter. So, and that way he was able to play a bigger list. So we played 1,300, I think.
So 1,300 points. How many stands of models did you have?
Because
that doesn't sound like a lot of models. But I mean, I only know Warhammer Fantasy and 40K, right? So 1,300 points doesn't sound like a whole heck of a lot.
I probably had 10 units of infantry, 3 war machine, and 2 characters.
Oh, okay. So it's a pretty big game.
Yeah, I think the regular tournament level, and that's with quotes. But to be honest, there's a Warmaster scene is getting back up. In the UK and Europe with the Warmaster Revolution now.
Mm-hmm.
So they're running tournaments at least every other month almost and getting 16 player plus. So the game is getting back. That's cool. But the regular size they play is 2,000.
Okay, so much bigger.
Yeah. I own almost 3,000 points of Dwarf at I think, and that's almost before adding up magic ups, magic items 3,000? And stuff like that. Yeah, I bought, now if you look for out of print Warmaster stuff, it cost a lot, but for a while everybody was just discarding them. So I got that for $100, I think, and selling that now, that would probably be, almost 1,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is insane.
Yeah. Perchance, a lot of companies, other companies are doing 10mm fantasy stuff.
Yeah.
They don't do exactly exact proxies for everything in all list, but you can manage to find most of them now. So you don't have to look for the super pricey Game Workshop out of prints, and you can go for either Magister Militum or Militum, something like that. Calistra, there's a bunch of people.
And Magister Militum.
Yeah.
The
Evil Men we talked about a couple of episodes ago. They do Chaos Troops. Trolls Under the Bridge do some too. So there's a bunch of companies who do them.
So. No, it's good to see 10mm gaming coming back. Because it's an interesting format because you can do so much because the models aren't huge, right?
Yeah, I didn't paint them much yet. I did one unit of warriors and a stand of slayers. But once I'm done with the stuff I have to finish right now, the commissions and one of a model I picked for my pigs, I bought the battle engine, the meat thresher. Once those are done, I'll probably go back to Pulp City and Warmaster for painting. Warmaster paints quickly, so it would be fun. You see the impact quickly in your army because it fills up. And they're fast to paint. A lot faster than most of the larger scale stuff I do. I don't try to do super blending on 10mm. I did that on 15 with the Chronicle stuff. I won't do that on 10.
Well, come on.
Yeah, come on. Yeah, no way. There's no painting on this for 10mm right now. And I'm fine with that.
chicken.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So is that it?
Yes, that's it.
Okay. So why don't we take a quick break and then come back with our main topics. So we'll be right back, geeks. And we're back. All right. So, first of our two main topics, Antoine. The big reveal.
Yeah.
So, little backstory. Listeners will know that I've spent a lot of time in the last couple of years going to different events in the States, Adepticon, ReaperCon, TempleCon. And, having gone to ReaperCon a couple times, I really found the format of the event pretty spectacular. And I loved the sense of community when I was there. And I thought it'd be really cool if we could do something like that here, locally. Because we have a lot of talented artists locally. And we have a lot of people who like to paint. So I'm like, what if we bring these people together where the artists can help people develop some skills? And we can, you know, paint together as a community and have a fun event and do a little of a little open painting contest. And Antoine and I talked about it on and off. And then finally, we decided to make it happen. And borrowing from a name from something that we used to do, or that Antoine's group used to do, the Club Chaos, we stole the name for an event called Couleur ton monde. So, color your world. What? You're laughing at me and I'm not sure why.
Just the French pronunciation was funny.
Oh, couleur ton monde. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. I added a U in there that wasn't supposed to be there. Yeah, you threw me all off now.
Yeah.
My whole thing.
Anyway, so couleur ton monde.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of gaming events around here. Lots of smaller tournaments, store events, Chaos League that we run, the ND Open, but even Quebec City Open, that's going to be our second or third year this year. But all of those are centered around the gaming part of the hobby, not the artistic part. So that was something that's missing. That's something that's missing here.
Yeah. So we started looking at how we could run something that would help people develop some skills and get out and paint together and do something fun. And we quickly realized that it was not going to be easy, I think. And, you know, there's the usual issues, finding space, how are we going to let people know about it? How are we going to encourage people to come out? How much are we going to have to charge to make this happen? And are people going to be willing to pay it?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there's been a lot of challenges just to get to the, a realistic planning stage. Right? And, sorry. I just saw something for the next topic and it caught my eye and I completely misread it. Anyway. We've done a lot of the initial steps. We went and looked at a space this week.
Mm-hmm. Some real nice space.
Yeah, I think it's got a lot of potential. So what are people... And the other thing we had to talk about, of course, the finding space and pricing was, what are people going to do when they get there? Like, what type of event are we going to make this?
Yeah. So what we want people to do is we want people to paint. We want people to share. We want people to look at stuff and learn new techniques and everything. So we are following what, as you said, the Reaper format, ReaperCon format, quite close to what they do. So the main stage is getting everybody in a room and have them painting. So we'll have a big general painting area, and where they can sit, chat, paint. We'll have water plates, everything that people need to paint. And we are looking for a well-lit room so that you don't have to bring your portable lamp if you don't want to, but you can if you want.
Yeah.
And we want also access to people who know more about painting. So I'll let you know about that setup. Like, we want to have classes or at least specific topic approach, but we also want those people who are in the know to be approachable by everybody, not just have them sitting in class all day.
Yeah. And that's one of the great strengths of ReaperCon that we stole. So at ReaperCon, you can go and you can pay a fee to take a class with a few other people, say 10 other people or whatever, with a specific teacher on a specific topic. So we're going to offer something like that. So if you want to take, and I'm going to use this as an example, a OSL class with Yom, then you can do that. You'll pay a nominal fee, and you'll do a two-hour class with Yom.
And from but there, you will do too much OSL on all your models.
Yes, everything will be glowing. You'll have to wear sunglasses when playing your games. But then when Yom is not in that class, he will be sitting at a head table in a room with the other artists who aren't in a class, and he'll be there to give advice, to give pointers, to give critiques and commentary, and to help everyone else. And I think it's going to really help people level up, because it's one thing to randomly talk to someone on Facebook or to see that they're a good painter, but it's another to actually be able to interact with them.
And see their model for real, be able to see all the angles, show them your stuff, because we don't all have good lighting setups for cameras and pictures. So it's easy to share on the web. It's not easy to share representative pictures of what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And even people who've been doing pictures of their models for years don't necessarily take great pictures. Like, we often tease Yom a little bit that some of his photos are not the best for his model. Though he has gotten significantly better.
Yeah.
But, it was something we often picked on him about, because, your models look great, but your pictures don't do them justice. By having everyone there, I think, and because different instructors have different skill sets, you'll be able to get a lot of information about different aspects of your model. Different points of view. So you can really work on a lot of different areas of painting.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking at keeping costs low, right? Do we want to discuss a little bit, Antoine, kind of the price we're aiming at?
We can.
The caveat that
those are not final. We're still working out the price.
These are our goals.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm not going to talk about what the class costs are, because I think we need to discuss that with
the artists. Different teachers and artists.
And it's going to depend on materials and stuff required for the class.
Mm-hmm.
But we were looking,
so something around, we're aiming at, because we have two formats for the event. We're not sure which one we're going for yet. We either want to do a single day, long day format, let's say from 9 in the morning to 9 in the afternoon, 9 in the evening.
Yeah.
Or over two days, but do shorter days, like 10 to 5 or something like that.
Yeah.
So that's one big question that remains to be determined. But depending on what format we want, we're aiming at something maybe $20 to $25 per day, depending on a short or long day. And something around 30-35 for the whole weekend, maybe. If we do a 2-day event, if you pay for a 2-day pass.
Yeah. So the event will be extremely affordable. And your ticket will also include a swag bag.
Mm-hmm.
And we are aiming to give you back, equal value of useful product or savings in the swag bag to what you paid for the attendance.
Yeah. And right? We're doing so that with sponsors, for sure.
Yeah. So if you paid $25 or $30 for an entry, you will get, the goal is that you will get at least that back in value.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be thanks to our sponsors.
That's not all you get. So when you pay your ticket, you get your entry to the general painting area. You get access to the artist in the ed row, like you said. Mm-hmm. You get the swag bag, but you'll also get, access to registering for classes. Those are extra payments, like we mentioned. We don't have the final process in those because we need to pay the artist and we need to pay for specific materials for those classes. But
I will say we'd like to have classes as low as $10 to $15.
Yeah.
There may be more expensive classes than that, but there will be entry-level classes at that price. And we're talking like a 2-2.5 hour class. It's not an all-day thing. So you can still benefit from the rest of the event.
Mm-hmm.
But you get a specific class targeted, a specific technique. And again, the goal is model provided, like materials provided, in the cost of the class. So if you take a $10 or $15 class, well, you will get a model as well. So not only will you get the knowledge, but you'll get your whatever you worked on in the class to take with you.
Mm-hmm. On top of that, in the intro, you mentioned a painting contest. So we want to run a smallish open format contest. We will probably get all the main artists, the teachers out of it, and they will be there as judge for the event. We want to get to make the event available to any level of painters. And that's also making the painting contest accessible to everyone by not having to face, if we keep locally, like Faust or Yom or Mathieu, if he ever showed up.
And I think if we follow the Reaper guidelines exactly, the grading of the contest, first off, it's an open contest. So it's not a podium format where you're trying to go for number one, right? It's you're trying to produce the best thing you can produce.
Yep.
And then you're graded on your techniques and the artistic value of the piece, or whatever, depending on the category and depending on how we decide. And this is all very vague. We haven't really decided everything. A model. And again, this is not like a master's painting competition. So, if you get a gold, it'll mean you have smooth blends, excellent lighting. Maybe you do some OSL. You're using some really advanced techniques and you applied them well. It does not necessarily mean that you're going to go out and win a crystal brush next year, but it means that you've got all the advanced techniques and a good understanding of how to apply them. And I'm going to use martial arts as an example, right? There's a lot of people with black belts out there. Not every black belt is the same.
No.
Right? Black belt in martial arts means that you have mastered all the techniques, all the basic techniques. That does not mean that you're the best at them. It just means you've mastered them. So I think, a painting contest like this can encourage people and reward them for effort at the same time. And hopefully encourage people to improve for next year. Cause we'd like to keep running this.
Yeah. The goal is to have an annual event. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've seen this style of painting competition do some really great things at ReaperCon. And I think we can really benefit from something like it here we have a premier painting contest, right?
Yes, with Figurines Québec.
Figurines Québec. But that's more of a master's competition.
Yeah.
In all honesty.
We will use a similar format, the open format, but we're aiming it at a more gamer level painters.
Yeah. So that'll give us basically a painting contest for everyone between the two of them, which is good.
On top of that, we are looking at maybe running more like fun events, like maybe some speed painting contest. Maybe some intro class to painting for kids.
Yep. So maybe daddy wants to come to one of the 2 days, but you know, daddy's got the kids. Well, that's okay. We'll have activities that can keep the kids interested while daddy or mommy is, you know, learning some more advanced techniques from one of the teachers or taking a class or whatever. You know, we're trying to make it really an inclusive event.
Yeah.
And we're trying to go for a decent size. I think our goal, we're in that 50 to 60 person target, I think is really what we're going for a first event.
Yeah.
We're prepared to do more than that, but that's kind of like our minimum.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to say it. That's a good minimum. I think we're aiming for maybe 70 to 80. That would be a good size, but I think it's more of a dream this year.
Yeah, yeah. Well, everything's going to start somewhere, right?
Yeah. So, if you want to give us comments about the event, if you like what you're hearing, we're open to that. Well, you have all the information at the end of the show for how to contact us. We will probably be running a poll on our Facebook page and maybe on Twitter too about the format of the event. If it's 1 day or two, we're still working on that. And we want also to hear from the community what type of duration you would like best.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously a 1 day event might be easier for some people, but 2 days lets you see maybe more people over the course of the weekend, right?
Yeah.
Maybe we should talk a little about, we didn't mention this before, we mentioned there are going to be different types of classes, but we didn't actually talk about what types of classes we've discussed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. So you already mentioned OSL.
Yeah, YOMSL, yeah. Antoine, I think we talked about having you teach a couple different things.
Maybe some basic metallics, like doing quick and dirty true metallics.
That's
one of the things I do well. So if you're painting dirty pigs, like I do often, I have pretty much mastered the dirty look.
Yeah, well, your metallics look really nice, though. I really like the way they come off on the table.
Yeah.
We talked about weathering.
Yes. So we've approached Guillaume Cavard, if I remember his name correctly. So he won for the last 2 years the Best of Weathering at Figurine Quebec. So he knows his stuff.
Yep, absolutely.
So he's been approached. He's interested. It all depends on the dates right now.
Yeah.
We have approached Maxime Croteau, who's another name. He's a painter from Quebec. He's already doing a lot of classes, intro classes to painting. So that's one thing he's really good at, getting people into painting, like getting gamers to a next level. So he's good at, not really beginners, but at least beginners to intermediate level, to get them to better techniques and good grasp on some more advanced techniques. So he's interested too. We've talked with David Faust, who's he won the Best of Show last year. He placed in a multiple contest. He won the one of the Color Tourmonde painting contests we ran back in the day at when we were doing Kieslerdijk. Color Tourmonde names come from that. We were running a monthly challenge painting, and during the first three Kieslerdijk, we also ran a painting contest at the same time that was called Color Tourmonde. So that's where we're taking the name from. And David won one of those when it was a Crystal Brush qualifier.
Right. Yeah, so we have a lot of good ideas, and I think it'll be a great way for people to learn some new techniques and improve what they know. And one of the things that always surprised me about ReaperCon, you know, don't underestimate the value of being able to sit in a room with a bunch of your peers painting. because while the guy two seats down from you may not be David Faust or Mathieu Fontaine or Yom, he may still be better at you or have an interesting technique for doing something a certain way. So you will learn from everyone there, not just the instructors.
Oh, yes. Some guys might be master at speed painting armies, like tips on how to give a really good level for the tabletop quickly. That doesn't really show. So, like super controlled dry brush or something like that. So,
Cheaty airbrushing.
Yeah, cheaty airbrushing or good edge highlighting, stuff like that. So, everybody has something they can learn or they can share.
Absolutely. All right. I know we've also talked a little bit to it. Do we want to talk a bit about our funding plans for this event?
Yes. So we are still finalizing the venue, the costing level, talking with sponsors. Now, when we're aiming for fall, we don't have an exact date yet. It depends on the venue and everything. But to running something like that costs money.
Yes.
So we will have a deposit on the room paid once we have finalized that. And we are looking at running either an Indiegogo or Kickstarter. So a crowdfunding campaign to judge the interest level. So we'll run probably a pretty short one, probably 3 weeks maximum. Too long, it doesn't matter. We're not doing a giant game. We're not the next on this side. So,
but wouldn't it be nice?
Yeah. That will let us see if there's an interest and gauge if we have at least the minimum level of interest to confirm our location with the room, with the venue, and to know if we are in the right direction. And if not, well, we'll have a painting weekend just for us guys, and we'll just be down our prepayment.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll lose
the deposit on the venue and
deposit on the room, and that's it. Yeah, exactly. So. Not the end of the world.
Yeah.
Won't break the bank.
We will have incentive on the Kickstarter, probably some either VIP swag bags or stuff like that. So upgrade to the swag bags that everybody will get. You'll get a small, nicer version. Let's say instead of having a small butt of paint, you might have a big one or a nicer brush or whatever.
So one of the things we've talked about is including a paintbrush. A decent quality paintbrush in every swag bag, but the VIP bag would have a Konski Sable brush. So like good upgrades and good value for the prepayment. So try to encourage people to sign up early.
Yeah. Or all we don't know yet if we'll have a single level or two level for like the Kickstarter VIPs for people who want to have an upgrade and have a lamp provided for them or whatever, have a class included or a first run at registering for classes once they go up or stuff like that. So we are working on the exact details and you should hear about us in the upcoming month.
Yep. Yeah, we should. I think we'll probably have to move pretty quickly on this. So I think by the end of June, we'll have stuff hammered out in the Kickstarter.
Kickstarter shouldn't run a lot later than early July.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, I think we've talked about Color Ton Monde enough.
Yeah.
So I pronounced it right that time, see?
Yeah, not extra you. That's good. So, yeah. Check our Facebook page.
Silly French.
Yeah.
two words that basically mean the same thing but are different, right?
So check our Facebook page, check our Twitter feed for the polls. We want to hear from you about the length of the event. And whatever else you want to talk to us about. So we're open to any suggestion. It doesn't mean we'll listen, but at least we'll read them.
That was very diplomatic the way you said that. I approve.
Another thing, we've used we a lot, and we is not only Paul and I. We're working with the old Club Kiosk and Geeks of the Nerd crew. So
yeah.
In the group, there's Yom, B-Steve, and also Papa Guillaume from Club Kiosk. So
yep.
It's the all five of us are working on it. We don't want to exclude the other guys.
This is true. Well, we can exclude Yom a little bit. Actually, wait, no, we need him. Eh? Okay, fine. Fine, Yom, you're back in. You're back in the band. Man, I just love giving him stick. I don't know why. He's really a nice guy. Like, seriously, he's a nice guy. I just love giving him stick. All right. So, next topic. Speaking of Yom, how to find opponents. I think I killed Antoine.
Yeah, you say a nice guy, and then you add that just after. You had to add a jab.
Yeah. No, Yom is a good opponent. He's just very focused, and I think he's easy to misread because he's super focused on the game.
Yeah.
People take it as like he's, you know, super serious, you know, ultra hardcore. And I think it's this way he concentrates. I actually had, and this made me kind of chuckle because I had that same comment about B. Steve just yesterday about how he's intimidating to play because he's like super like tournament focused, like hardcore. And I'm like, well, yeah, but he's the friendliest win at all cost player we know, right? Friendliest whack player we know.
Yeah. Add a clock in any game and some people switch to that.
Yeah,
or there absolutely. Are people like you and I that just clocks ourselves and
I forgot we were running a clock yesterday. Put it that way. Yeah. I actually forgot the clock was running. You know, of course, I forget everything. I forgot the train was there. I forgot the scenarios was there. I forgot the... I was too busy focused on trying to figure out how my models worked. I need to play more War Machine. Oh, well. Anyway, back on topic. How to find opponents. There's a lot of different ways you can find opponents. And it's not necessarily, it's a stupid topic, right? People are like, yeah, how hard can it be? Well, it's actually harder than you think because it's not just finding an opponent. You got to find opponents that are compatible.
Or that play the game you want to play.
Yeah, that's sure. The other thing. If you're playing War Master, it's hard to find opponents, right? Yeah. Your pool of people to play against are limited. If you're playing 40K or War Machine, well, you've got a bigger pool to swim in, right? To look for someone that's more compatible. You can be pickier, too. Right?
Yes. Yeah. If I want to have a War Master game, I don't have much of a choice. We're three active players that I know in the old province. So if I'm picky, I'm losing half of my opponents right there.
That's, yeah, true. True enough. Okay, so let's look at... So we made a list... Actually, Antoine made a list of ways that you can find players, and I read through it and agreed with them all. So there you go. I did something too. So I like how first on his list is convert your friends. This is typically Antoine's strategy, by the way. Random game X comes out. Antoine decides he needs to try it. It's usually Yom or I think, are the suckers of choice.
Yes.
Yeah. But I have to say, on the whole, it's been pleasant experiences. We've played some really cool games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you and Yom tried out Relics and fell in love with Relics from Tor Gaming.
Yes.
What was that game you were playing with him that they did a Kickstarter? They had a few different models, and you had you could leap from point to point. It was a small skirmish game, 3-4 models per side.
Not when they launched Magic.
No, not Roots of Magic. That was the one you played with me, which is also a great game.
Yeah.
But there was another one. They did a Kickstarter. The good guys were like a party of adventurers. There was like a knight. There was like a lizard man.
Relic Blades.
Relic Blades, that's it. And you guys had super fun with that.
Yes, that right? was really fun. And yeah. I found back my cards this week. So that's another one we need to play more.
Right. And that was the thing. Like, so you find something and then you trick your friends into trying it.
Yes, I do.
Antoine is insidious, folks. He is insidious.
That works for small obscure games, but even for main games, if you don't have that many opponents, yeah, you could find friends that are not into miniature game yet, and maybe they could get interested from the hobby side or the gaming side or even the fluff yep. side for games that have a deep fluff like 40K or
yeah.
even War Machine now with all the novels and everything. So there's lots of ways yep. to get people interested.
Well, I mean, 40K, the fluff is what originally got me interested in 40K.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so it's not necessarily hard to convert your friends. Let's face it, the models look cool.
Oh, yes.
That is half the reason we play these games, because the models look cool. The tables look cool.
Yes.
I think when you plan properly, it's easy to convert friends.
At least to try.
Yeah.
Maybe not invest in them, but I know some people who have two armies for a game and they have friends who don't own any model, but they still play with them once in a while. They go for lighter games and they provide everything and at least they have opponents to play with.
Yep, that's true. The next obvious one is local stores. Obviously, if you've got a local gaming store, going there to find gamers makes a lot of sense. And the good thing about stores, they attract a lot of different people. So, you will find different types of gamers at every store. And there'll be different groups and different play styles. And it's going to be easier to see how people interact. Because you can watch them play, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you can go to the store on like their 40K night or War Machine night. And you can pick, you know, okay, yeah, that person is super competitive and that's how I want to play. So that's someone I want to play with. You know, that person is super casual. He seems like a nice guy, but, you know, it's not how I want to play the game or vice versa, right? You know, that person seems super hardcore and that's really intimidating. I'd rather play someone who's really casual.
Yeah. Depends on what you're looking for.
Yep. It depends on what you're looking for. But because you can see them it's a target-rich environment, because you can see them playing the game, you can kind of get a good impression, or a good idea, I should say, of what they're going to be like, and whether or not you want to approach them and try to, find a game with them or play a game with them.
And we mentioned local stores. It's mostly because, being in North America, we're more of a store culture, but
that's true.
If you were going to, the UK Europe. Or other places yeah. in Europe, I know gaming clubs are more the type of place you would looking for a similar experience.
Yeah, that's very true. It's funny how that works, eh? Like, the UK is the mecca of the hobby, right? And yet here, we play very differently.
Mm-hmm.
It is all centered around stores. There aren't really clubs, per se. And I think that's possibly because we just have a thing against paying for playing spaces in North America.
That, and I think we just have more space.
That's true too, right? In England, space is at a premium. Especially if you're like in London and stuff, you don't have a ton of space. So finding a place where you can set up a 4x8 table to play a giant 40K game is not necessarily easy.
And I think also there's a more of a club culture. Not just around the hobby, but around other stuff too.
In general.
So people are used to be part of a club to run hobbies or activities.
Yeah. No, that's a fair assessment, I think.
Like here, getting a room for a club would be a pain. I don't know where I'll go for that.
Yeah, see, in Montreal, I don't know. What you'd have to do here is like rent a church basement or like a Legion hall, do a monthly or biweekly thing at the Legion, but it would be tough and it would be expensive.
Yes.
Right. And that's the thing, getting people to pay money to have a place to play,
when they get free space at stores.
At a stores, or they'll just play at home.
Yeah. And most are big enough to have a playing space. Yeah.
Don't underestimate the basement gamer, right? Yep. I found that here in the West Island where I live, in the West Island, Montreal, people don't want to go to the stores. They'd rather just play at home.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting. Facebook groups. So finding a Facebook group for the game you play will definitely help you track down players for that game.
Yeah, either that or the other way around. You look for localized Facebook groups. So one thing we have here is Montreal Tabletop Gamers. So it's a generic group for everybody who play miniatures games or Miniature Rive Sud, which is a Google Plus group.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
So I mentioned Facebook.
So see, even I learned something.
Other stuff. Yeah, other social apps do it too.
Yeah.
And meetups were the same way.
Yeah. Meetups work like that as well. There's a 40K meetup in Montreal. There's a board game group meetup that's very popular.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for most games, there's pretty big Facebook communities.
Yes.
You know, if you look at War Machine, right? Not only are the generic War Machine ones, but there's all the faction ones. Every faction's got a Facebook group.
Yep.
So there's lots of places to explore and look for opponents and try to find people in your area. And even if you don't find someone to play against, you may find someone who knows where you can look.
Mm-hmm. You might not be aware of some stores near you or some more basement clubs. So. And you could learn from those groups or learn of local events that are in a drivable distance.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because let's be honest, most of the events in store don't market that well.
No, that's true. That's true. It's funny. Gaming stores are great places to find opponents and find models, but they don't market themselves very well. It seems like the one thing I've noticed about all gaming stores. Well, the majority of gaming stores, there's one in the South Shore that's doing a fairly aggressive marketing campaign.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, gaming stores don't advertise themselves very well. It's kind of a shame.
But it's a really niche market, so it's hard to advertise for it too. So.
Yeah, it's hard to get a return on investment, right?
Yeah.
Company forums. You know, now it depends on the company.
Yes, some companies no longer have forums.
Yes, or they have forums, but no one's in them. And community pages run by the company. So put that in there.
Yeah, same thing.
The company forums can be a good place to source players and learn a little bit about your local meta and what local events are running.
Yeah. But not all games have forums anymore. It was a thing back in the day, so... You can still find some for some game, but I think it's on the way down.
Yeah, well, forums are... I don't think of forums as in the old bulletin board systems we used to use, right? I think forums just as a generic term for any place you can communicate with other players. The Facebook groups are essentially a forum with poor search engine and impossible to follow threads.
Yeah, that's the main difference. That's why I like forums still.
Yeah. And I know it's the way of the dodo. And I get that. But, you know, I say there's still some forums that do well. You know, Daka Daka, Bolter and Chainsword, they still have really active communities and they've been around forever.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's because they're all filled with old people like us? Or
maybe.
But you know they're still going strong. For War Machine and Hordes, there's a new forum that opened up that it seemed to have a decent start. I don't know if it's still going strong, which was Lorma Hordes.
Yeah, it went up when the PB forum was on pause while they were reworking it. Yeah,
and then it just became more permanent when the PB forums became
changed.
Yeah, as I say, less hospitable. Anyway, that's. topic for another show.
The Lost Show.
Yeah, The Lost Show. Where Yom and I yelled at each other. where we politely agreed to disagree. There. Local events. That's the other thing. So you use all these other methods to try to find local events. So local events will, again, just like the gaming store, let you see a large section of the community and, you know, maybe help you decide what style you want to play,
mm-hmm.
like how you want to play the game, and let you find players to play against.
Yep. No, attending an event is, especially if it's not a store one, but just a bit bigger than that, you'll either, if you attend as a player or just go and watch, but even as a player, it's worth it because you meet new people that you have never played against.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
that's the way first when I was back in Victoriaville, when we started playing, we went to event in Montreal and Quebec and we met a lot of people that way that we would have never met outside of that.
Absolutely.
That are friends now.
And even not necessarily local. I mean,
or even conventions. Yeah.
Yeah. So like my buddy Ben, who went to Adepticon last year and didn't really have the intention of playing, he just went to kind of check it out and see what people were like and to see the game as played and to kind of get an idea of what the meta might be like. Because you can like a game on paper, but then to see it played, find out it's really not what you thought, right?
Mm-hmm. Or not your style.
Yep. And I think some games change drastically on paper versus the reality of how the game is played live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 40K is a great example of that. If you look at 7th edition, you read the rule book, it doesn't seem bad. Oh, you can do some allies. Oh, it's got some neat ideas. But then you see where the community has taken that in terms of a competitive event anyway. And it's a very big departure from what most people read when they read the book.
Yeah.
Right? So it can be almost a culture shock when you get to see that game played that way. Especially if you're a fluff bunny,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you're like me and you're all about the fluff and stuff and you know, why is that guy running Imperial Knights with Eldar and a Tau Riptide? Like, what is going on? I don't understand, you know? So I can give you some insights into how you want to play the game, because not only finding opponents, but picking the right opponents is a big deal, because not having the right opponents will make the game less fun.
Yeah. It could make even you dislike the game.
Yeah, I mean, for a long time, I had a pretty big hate on for War Machine, because I just had so many bad games in a row. I just decided that, you know, the community was terrible and I wasn't going to play the game anymore. And then I started hanging out with you guys and I get to play with you. And I got to play with Yom, and despite playing with Yom, I still figured I liked the game. Man, I'm really like digging it. Yom today is terrible. He's gonna think it's because we played last night. He's gonna like be all like, "Did I do something wrong? Did I?" He's gonna be all scarred. I'm gonna feel bad. It's like that time I played 40K with him, and then we kept trying to play another game, and I couldn't get the schedule to work, and he literally thought I was dodging him. I made him all paranoid about it. He thought he'd really done something to offend me. Poor guy. Yeah. So I think, did we kind of go over everything we wanted to talk about, or?
Yeah, I think that rounds it up. If you have other ideas, please share with us.
Stuff yeah, that would
we,
be great.
We mentioned or forgot.
If you can think of a way to find opponents that we didn't mention, that'd be awesome. Send it to us on Facebook or tweet it to us or message us on our webpage. We don't have a webpage anymore because it exploded.
Yeah, but the new
website. Can they still comment on the shows?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I guess that's going to be about 2 hours of painting nonsense. By this point, everyone's either gone to sleep or gotten tired of painting. So we should probably wrap it up, Antoine.
Yes.
Do you have any shout-outs?
Yeah, you'd like I have two.
Okay.
So it's two podcasts I've started listening in the past 2-3 months, maybe a bit more. First one is A Be Night in Canada. They do a podcast.
Awesome name, by the way.
Pretty similar to us in format. They talk a lot about the hobby side, not just gaming, but they do both. They talk about gaming, they talk about hobby, they talk about a ton of game systems. However, they talk about that boring Battletech game too much, and they hate Guild Ball, so they're kind of a nemesis because of that.
Boring Battletech? You mean like classic Battletech?
Yeah.
Man, that takes me back.
Yeah.
Let me get my pencil and I can fill all those little circles in.
That's just to poke at Tom and all the other guys. It's really fun. I like their format too. They have periods, first period, second period, which are their topics.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, so it's a fun show. It's a fun listen to. Really lively guys.
I that must confuse the Americans though.
Maybe
they don't get the reference.
Yeah, and even the intro tune is based on the Abbey Knight and
Hockey Night in Canada,
intro. So it's fun. And the other podcast is Paint All the Minis. So it's an interview podcast that interviews hobbyists at large. It interviews everyday guys. It interview company guys. Old designers, but there is always a first part, which is an intro about the person, what they do in the industry, if they are part of the industry. And
nice.
The rest is question about painting. It's all about the hobby side. How they got into gaming, how they got into painting, what type of painting they prefer, scale, color, what type of miniatures. So it's really interesting to listen, especially because of the variety of the diversity of the people he gets on the show.
I'm totally gonna have to add that to my my podcatcher.
Yeah, it's a pretty recent addition. I think it's around 20 shows released, and it releases every week and sometimes two times a week. So yeah,
for us, 20 shows could be like 3 years.
Yeah, something like that. And just to mention, Paint All the Minis is also. There's also a Facebook group associated to it, which is open to all level of painters just to share. The goal is to share and to be positive about the hobby. The podcast and the group is all about positiveness and sharing. So it's really fun.
Whoa, positive gamers?
Yeah. No, painters.
I don't know. I know a lot of painters, dude. It's a pretty drama-filled hobby, so
mm-hmm.
I'm skeptical.
Yeah. I'm not. I'm part of a group. I've been part for a little while now. I really like the show. I really like Dan, the host, the main host. I really like the core group on the Facebook group. It's fun. Lots of sharing, lots of information, lots of positive comments. So it's
hey, I'm really in that group. How am I in that group, but I never get updates from it? How weird is that? I've got notifications set off. That is so strange. But looking through this, it is all filled with wondrous little painting things. I'm going to have to check this out.
And that's it for me. So we'll have links to those two podcasts and the Facebook group for Paint All the Minis too. But they're not hard to find. Paint All the Minis or Hobby Night in Canada. So too simple. Easy to find in your podcast listener.
All right.
Anything Dude. You wanted to mention, Paul?
No, I'm good. I've made fun of Yom several times. I got some podcasts to listen to. I think that's a show.
Well, that's good.
That checks all the boxes for me, man. Made fun of Yom. Got some new podcasts. Excellent. All right, Antoine. So I'll let you go, and we'll get together in a couple weeks and do this again.
Bye, geeks.
Thanks for listening to Geeks of the North. If you want to contact us, you can email us at geeksofthenorth@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/geeksofthenorth, or follow us on Twitter at geeksofthenorth. You can follow me, Paul, at PRFilio, Antoine at Eltonio Berg, Steve at B_Steve, and if you really feel the need, I guess you can follow Yom. He's at Yomasta. Breaks and outro music by La Drave. You can listen to them at ladrave.bandcamp.com. See you next time, geeks.
Thank you for checking out United Geeks Network Family Member. If you enjoyed it and are looking for other online media with a geek culture slant, head over to UnitedGeeksNetwork.com, where you will find the Gaming Careers Podcast, the resource for people looking to find their fit in the gaming industry. You will hear game industry professionals talk about how they succeed in today's competitive environment and how you can do the same. The United Geeks Network. You can broadcast your geekiness at UnitedGeeksNetwork.com.